How's it going, everybody? Dieter Kurtenbach, joined by Mark Medina. We are in star dressing room number 4 at the Toyota Center in Houston, Texas.
Yeah, Dieter, you're kind of a big deal.
Yeah, well, that's why we're in room number 4. I can only imagine what was going on in room number 1. Warriors lose game 3, the pivotal game 3, which sets up a pivotal game 4. Lose game 3, a fantastic basketball game, in overtime, 126-121. Before Mark and I dive into this one, and boy, is there a lot to chew on here, let's tell you all about the Clay deal. We've been telling you about the Clay deal. You know the Clay deal by now. 11 cents a day, 11 months, bumping up against that paywall. Looking for a good deal? We got one for you, the Clay deal. You got to get on that right now. And also, if this is your first time with the podcast, thank you for joining us. If it is not, and you're not already subscribed, I don't know why you're going through the hassle. That's just a really inefficient way to go about your business. So you should subscribe to the podcast, and you can do that on all the major podcast platforms, Spotify, Apple, Google, Stitcher, ones that I haven't heard of yet. I don't know if we're on that one that is embroiled in fraud right now, but maybe we are, maybe we aren't. Nevertheless, if you know how to get a podcast, you can get this one subscribed to. And while you're subscribing, you know, leave a review. And don't hold it against us that that my syntax is off. This is a very early morning recording, and we're going to just empty the brain. We're going to empty the notebook here with Mark Medina. Mark, first and foremost, Warriors have an opportunity to basically claim the series here, and they get tremendous performances. I mean, outstanding performances from Kevin Durant, 46 points, Draymond Green on the defensive end, and then he has a triple-double to boot, and Andre Iguodala on the defensive end, and yet they don't get the job done, losing in overtime. Where did this one go wrong?
Well, it's interesting because you have three different positives. There's three different negatives. They got severely out-rebounded, and when I say severely out-rebounded, it was pretty significant. It was 55-35, and then the offensive glass was 17-7. Steph Curry had one of his worst performances, if not the worst, in the playoffs. He didn't shoot the ball well, 7-23 from the field, 2-9 from three. Missed a handful of layups late in the game, tried to dunk for some reason, and that didn't work out either. Klay also didn't play well. He did redeem himself a little bit in the second half. He got a really good defensive stop on Chris Paul to force a jump ball that forced overtime, but he was basically MIA the first half. And so I think this kind of illustrates two things. One, they have to own the boards because the Rockets shoot a lot of threes. If they miss it, it's not a big deal if they grab the rebound. And two, they can't afford the Splash Brothers to be this awful. I mean, usually the Warriors have so much depth, you know, top heavy, that, you know, say one of them has an off night, hey, well, Kevin Durant or Draymond Green lead us. But when you have two of them, it doesn't work out that way.
The rebounds are obviously a huge factor. As you mentioned, when you shoot as many threes as the Rockets do, when you're getting offensive rebounds, you're just – there's a variance in the three-point game. And the Rockets shot 42% from beyond the arc, which is a pretty good night for them. They put up 42 threes. I'd be fascinated to see, you know, second chance points, 18. I think it was even more than that. All things considered, because of the amount of offensive rebounds. They were stringing together three or four at a time at times. P.J. Tucker was a hoss. And P.J. Tucker is a first-team All-Dieter member. He's just a guy who is always going to – he's a winner. And Mike D'Antoni said after the game, he refused to let us lose. And that's what it looked like. Same time, Draymond Green was doing the same thing for the Warriors. And ultimately, it came down to how the stars performed, as you mentioned. And James Harden made his shots down the stretch, shockingly, but he made them. He might have charged through Draymond Green on the final shot of the game for him, but alas, he was excellent. 41 points in this contest, 14 of 32 from the field, and clutch down the stretch. Whereas Stephen Curry wasn't, and even with Kevin Durant's great performance, when you have Steph Curry go 7 of 23 from the floor, 17 points, 5 fouls, again, he's had 5 fouls in every single one of these games. He went 0 for 6 in the fourth quarter in overtime. He only made 3 of his 10 shots in the paint. He went 2 for 9 from 3, and he missed 2 of 3 free throws tonight, which is just weird. He'll go months without missing 2 free throws in a month. He missed 2 on one trip to the line. He is not going to blame the injuries. And so I don't think we should do it for him. The ankle, I don't actually think that's that big of a deal. I'm going to wash away the ankle. His left hand is useless to him right now. So many of those missed layups were him trying to go up with the left and him having no touch with that left hand. We saw it in game two, his inability to control the ball on the dribble with the left hand. I think the Rockets made an adjustment, said, do whatever the hell you want. You can go to the left all you want. We're not going to even stop you. And he couldn't do anything with that hand, and you can't bring the ball to your right hand when you're driving with your left, as certainly the Rockets know, having played with James Harden. It's rough. It looks like a lobster claw out there. He just has no touch whatsoever. And the dunk, okay, the dunk is the dunk. That was stupid. He made one dunk in the entire regular season. He only attempted three. So the fact that you're shooting a 33% shot there, rather stupid. But he had nobody in front of him. He was trying to take out some frustration, and the basketball god spoke and said, this is not your night, sir. And the Warriors, who frankly probably should have fouled in that situation, they were still only down five. There's about 18 seconds left in the game. That's a two-possession game. They didn't even bother fouling. They knew. Writing was on the wall. Steph Curry just missed a dunk. We have no business winning this game. Let's call it, boys. And I appreciate Steph being positive about it after the game, saying it wasn't his finest moment, but I just got done writing this, and it'll be up by the time you guys hear this, my column. Steph gets a bad rap for his postseason production. His postseason production is marginally worse. I mean, almost inconsequentially worse than his regular season performance. He's down maybe a point or two in effective field goal percentage. He averages one fewer assists per game. 26 points per game in the playoffs, 26 points per game in the regular season. This is what happens when you're a three-point shooter, as James Harden can tell you. Sometimes you just don't have it. Sometimes you have it way too much, and it all evens out in the long run, and it's a small sample size in the playoffs. But that narrative that Steph is not a playoff performer, that he's not a primetime performer, it's going to hound him. And these are the people who bring up constantly, he has no finals MVPs, as if he shouldn't have won two. But after that performance, he's going to hear it for the next 48 hours. He needs to come out in game four for his own sake and for the Warriors' sake and just have a monster game. And I'm interested to see if that's even possible with that left hand right now, because it's pretty rough going. I'm sure when I go back and watch the tape, it's going to be even more glaring than it looked in the moment. I mean, did you notice the same thing with the left hand, that it was just completely worthless to him?
Yeah, I noticed two things. One, during pregame warm-up, he kept trying to dribble with his left hand, and he didn't feel comfortable. And I had heard that he's been tinkering with the tape a lot to try to get a comfort level on his middle finger. And, you know, there were times when it first happened where it was also – he also had it taped on his ring finger, so, like, the fingers wouldn't, like, jam against each other. But at the same time, it's not a shooting hand, right?
Right.
Like, it shouldn't be that drastic. And I get the layups, like, if he's going to go left and miss some of those. But the shots on a normal basis, as far as his threes and jumpers, it shouldn't be that significantly effective. If it was his shooting hand and he's wearing tape or a splint on his index finger or his middle finger, I get it. But it's not a shooting hand. So I can only accept that excuse so far. And again, like, Steph's not using that as an excuse, but when I was watching this game, I really couldn't, it just seemed dumbfounding. Like, I don't think he was disengaged at all. I just think he just wet the bed, and there's no real explanation for it,
which again kind of feeds back in. I mean, you look at statistically, he's had much worse games than this. I mean, there were two games in the 2016 NBA Finals, Game 7 and I believe Game 1, where he was pretty woeful, all things considered. But I've seen every one of his playoff games for the last 5 years. This one, it's not recency bias. This one stands out as really off. Something's not right. And again, if he does not want to use the injuries as an excuse, he says, I'm out there, I need to perform, then we can't do it for him. And that means that he has to come out and have a real big bounce-back game. He's shooting 36% in this series. He's shooting 25% from three. He's getting five fouls in every game. I mean, it's just unacceptable. This is the only series of consequence in the Western Conference this year. This is the show, and he has yet to show up for it. And it's a credit to Kevin Durant. It's a credit to Draymond Green. It's a credit to Andre Iguodala that the Warriors have a chance, or had a chance tonight, to take a 3-0 to win the series. to just take it. Because the Rockets, with everything, I mean, this does not feel like an emotionally strong team to me, the Houston Rockets. They would have been in L.A. halfway through the game four. I mean, they would have already been on vacation by the time that game got to halftime. But now it's game on. I mean, 2-1, series doesn't start until the home team loses. Rockets could be going back to Oracle Arena on Monday night, 2-2. And then we're looking at a very long, very difficult series. And it's for a team that has not taken advantage of opportunities, either because they haven't focused or maybe their focus waned in the incorrect moments tonight. And I want to get into that in a second. Like, this is just a team that always has to make it a little bit more difficult than it needs to be for them. And obviously there's a very high standard for them, but man, this is just another example. And this one felt more wasteful than you look at like games, what was it, game three of the Clipper series and game five of the Clipper series. I mean, those were ridiculous games, all things considered. It was a lot of the same formula. This one felt like, okay, maybe they're not super focused, but this one felt wasteful. You can't waste 46 points from Kevin Durant.
Yeah, squandering the 31-point lead game two, game five against the Clippers, they just weren't trying. It was regular season Warriors coming back into the playoffs. Here, I think the Warriors were trying. They weren't executing well. And, you know, the refrain from Steph and certainly his teammates are, hey, he'll bounce back at Steph Curry. And, yeah, in normal circumstances, of course he would, maybe in a regular season, but this is the playoffs. Like, he has to bounce back game four because I'm wondering, has Kevin Durant kind of like reached his apex with not only his recent play, but against Houston itself, where maybe it's almost a repeat of last year, where at the beginning of the series, like, hey, we don't have an answer against him, so God bless you if you make shots. We can't do anything. And then all of a sudden, he became inefficient, KD. Well, if Steph doesn't turn this around, it's very well possible that you're going to start to see Kevin Durant at his worst as well.
It's an absolutely astute point because, you wasted not just a great game from Kevin Durant points-wise, you wasted an efficient game, all things considered. And what Durant was able to do at the beginning of the fourth quarter was flabbergasting. I think he went on a 10-0 run by himself. And he's the only reason the Warriors really had a shot in this game, because he was just the first, the last, the everything on offense. He's doing what we've seen so many times in this series, which is he's just going to do the James Harden thing, which is give me the ball and get the hell out of the way because I'm going to take care of it. Maybe it's a little less pronounced than the James Harden thing, but alas, it's the same effect, and it got even better results tonight. But you're right. There's always that tug and pull with this Warriors team regarding style and theory, and they do not want to go full on give KD the ball and ISO every time. They want to mix and match. They want to be a boxer that has a couple of different punches, a couple of different kinds of smoke. They don't have the main kind of smoke that's gotten them to four NBA finals already. They don't have that motion offense right now. And credit to the Rockets, they are really tough. They are scrappy. They're switching everything. They're holding and clawing and all this stuff. That's the playoffs. Steph Curry knows by now that that's how it goes. And he's not going to be able to get away with it on the other end because he's not as strong as these guys. But he got open looks, he missed them. He was able to get to the basket time and time again. He missed open looks at the basket. Maybe it's an off night. This feels like the result of a lot of things kind of coming together and a guy who's in a rut. And whether that's injury-induced or not, it doesn't matter. He's got to get out of the rut. Because if the Warriors want to continue to try to play with one kind of smoke, they will lose to this team. The Rockets have perfected their one kind of smoke. And I was talking to Andre Iguodala after the game, and I was asking him a couple questions about James Harden. I can't get too into it because we were kind of on and then off. But we know what James Harden can do. He is a master of the dark arts. And yes, the playoffs are a little bit different, but when you are on the island, when you are on Harden Island, and he's got you ISO'd out, you can't get away with squat. Now, you get him into the paint, you can do some stuff, right? It's a little bit more congestion. Hands are, who knows whose hand is where and all that stuff. But when you're out on the island, this is something that Durant also knows. Everyone's separated away. All three referees are looking directly at that play. Even if it's only with one eye, you got one guy looking directly at it. You got two other guys looking at it too. All eyes are on the ball, and there's nothing to make you miss if you smack a guy across the wrist or if you foul him coming up on the elbow. And James Harden is looking for the foul every time. So they know the Houston Rockets, I don't think that they've played their best game offensively. This was a damn good game by them, but a lot of that was scrap. They haven't had an awesome James Harden can't miss holy crap game yet. And it's coming. And the Warriors can certainly survive it, but they have to have both kinds of smoke. Because just asking KD to constantly do this on a night-in, night-out basis is totally unfair. I don't think it is an effective way to beat this Rockets team. And I just don't know how much more you can ask from the guy. I mean, he has been, let's just go through the numbers here. I mean, he had 29 points in the second half. He had, I think, five in the fourth, in the overtime period.
Yeah, he had 10, I think, in the first 151 of the fourth.
Right. So, I mean, the Warriors went down by 11 points at the beginning of the second quarter. And this is, I want to quickly point this out. Steve Kerr's rotation at the beginning of the second quarter should have lost the Warriors this game. He put out Jonas Jerebko for 4 minutes at the beginning. They have not made a field goal with that beginning of the second quarter unit in two games. That's not treading water. That is completely drowning two times over. You can't go 4 minutes without making a field goal in an NBA basketball game and expect to win. Not with the second unit, not against a Rockets team that, if nothing else, is steady in getting points. They're not a streaky, we're going to go on a run team. They're coming at you. And Jerebko out there for 4 minutes, he was a minus 12. Andrew Bogut had to come in because Kevon Looney, who has been bad in this series, there's just no argument against it. James Harden has figured out, I don't have to do the step back three against him because he seems to have a good way of defending it. Why don't I just drive past him every single time, you know, logically. And it's working wonders because Looney can't stay in front of him. So either he fouls him or the entire defense has to collapse and Harden does what Harden does. It only took him 3 years, but he figured out, hey, maybe drive past Kevon Looney. Looney gets three fouls early in the second quarter. They bring in Andrew Bogut. Andrew Bogut did something that I didn't think was possible. In 2 minutes and 56 seconds, he was a minus 10. That's not all Bogut, but it's not Bogut. I mean, he had something to do with it. He wasn't a victim of circumstance here. He's unplayable in this series. Jerebko, you got your 9 minutes out of him in game two. That was too cheeky by half in game three. The Warriors are sending out a lineup there with Durant, who was forcing up shots in the second quarter, with Klay, who can't dribble the ball. I mean, we know that about Klay Thompson. You have two guys who really can't, because when Durant's getting blitzed the way that the Rockets were blitzing him with two men, he's not very good handling the ball in those situations. And maybe they need to think about putting Quinn Cook out there just to actually control the basketball, or Andre Iguodala to start that beginning of the second quarter to just handle the basketball. You need an adult handling the basketball. You have no ball handlers on the court with that second unit. If Steve Kerr rolls that thing out again in game four, they're going to lose. They're going to lose straight up because that second unit isn't treading water. Nevertheless, Durant, they switch it up a little bit for the fourth quarter, but really it was just Kevin, keep us alive, and he did more than that. And it's just too much to ask. Steph Curry has to be significantly better, or this Warriors team is going to go back to Oracle Arena at 2-2, and they are going to not have any momentum going into a Game 5. And it will just feel as if the Rockets have complete control of this series, much in the same way it felt like the Warriors had complete control of this series going into tonight's game. That's how much these individual games can swing an entire narrative. And I think how much Game 4 can swing an entire narrative for Stephen Curry when it comes to his playoff performance, not just this year, but in a career. Until he gets an NBA Finals MVP, there will always be stupid people who think he's a bad playoff performer. But coming off of a game this poorly, coming off of two not-so-great games, people are out for blood with him. And that, listen, he doesn't have to care, but there is a narrative, and it's nice to shut people up when they're wrong. Well, they don't look that wrong right now. And a big comeback game from Stephen Curry in Game 4 would obviously be a big boon for the Warriors, but I think it would shut people up for a while because the spotlight is on him now. And that's not something we really have said at any point during this postseason. He had, I thought, a great Game 6. He had a good Game 1 or 2 in that Clipper series. Was it Game 1 where he had 38 points? It was fine, but he's got to perform now, and that's a tricky situation to be in, and I'm fascinated to see how he responds. You mentioned Clay a little bit earlier. You didn't like Clay's first, let's call it 43 minutes or so. but you pointed out a pivotal play in the game, obviously, where he got the jump ball with Chris Paul, who, by the way, should have been thrown out of the faceoff circle. I think he jumped four or five times on that jump ball.
Yeah, isn't that a violation?
Of course it is, but it's Chris Paul. What the hell do you expect? Give me a break. The king of the petty is, like, that dude, the rules don't apply to Chris Paul. it was a great defensive play. And it's something I want to throw this back to positivity. Clay bouncing back. It's only a matter of time before Clay really gets going. He's forced up a couple of shots. You clean that up. He's still getting open looks. I think there's a real opportunity for him to have a breakout game four, much as I think what was it game four in the last series. He had another big breakout game.
You know, there's no beaches for him to jump into here.
We can jump into the Gulf of Mexico. Someone drive him down to the oil spill.
Or
defensively, what did you see from Clay, and what did you see from Andre and Draymond in this game?
Yeah, I think defensively Clay was great. Draymond and Andre, I think Draymond had the complete game where not only was he covering on ground, but he was, I think, the only player who really did anything on the rebounding end. Like, I think everyone else lacked, and you can go down the line. Like, Steph and Clay didn't really – well, actually,
Clay had four offensive rebounds.
Yeah, Clay was fine. I meant Steph. Steph didn't do his job with the rebounds, which is of greater importance against Houston because they're taking threes and they have to kind of cover for those long rebounds. Then your guy, Kevon Looney, getting in foul trouble, prevented him from grabbing some boards. They've given Alphonso McKinney some playing time because, in theory, he gets a good rebounder. He didn't really do anything with that.
Yeah.
And then you'd think Andrew Bogut could at least grab something, or Derepko, because they're big, but nope.
McKinney also airballed two threes in this game, but listen, he wasn't a complete liability out there. You need to give McKinney probably a little bit more than 7 minutes going forward, and you just have to – you have to hope that his hustle comes through and that maybe that three-pointer goes in, but you don't really have many other options because Looney's looking less playable by the day. Derepko's unplayable, and Bogut's unplayable.
Yeah, and to answer your question about Iguodala, I think aside from the fact that Clint Capella had, like, the play of the game over him by dunking on him,
that was awesome.
I thought that Andre was very good with the communication part and just covering ground. The problem is there just seemed to be a disconnect between the front court today and the guards. Now, Clay, he grabbed some rebounds here or there. I think at the end of the game, he made some good defensive plays. But it just seemed like Andre and Draymond, their focus level was much better than everyone else's. And unlike other games where they can kind of connect everything together, it didn't translate elsewhere. They were amazing, but it didn't have that kind of trickle-down effect that usually happens.
I'm really interested to see it going into game four. So much was made of the three-day layoff here between games two and three. I mean, it felt like an eternity. We have not anywhere close to the same. I mean, a 48-hour turnaround here. Game four, Monday night, 1 hour later start. It's 8:30 here in Houston for that start. So good luck to the Houston Chronicle with that one. Iguodala goes for 41. Kevin Durant plays nearly 50 minutes in this game, 49-35. 44 for Draymond Green, who we got him in the locker room. First off, it took him about an hour and 20 minutes to come out for his postgame presser. And you get it, because he was getting treatment that entire time. He had on the leg compression bad boys, whatever Rick Celebrini has him doing. Then he was hopping into a cold tub, and then he was getting massaged down. I mean, this guy worked in all 44 of those minutes. Clay, 45. Steph, 44. I mean, Kevon got 13.5. He led the bench in minutes. I mean, this is Kerr riding his guys, and they don't have a big turnaround here. They've put in some serious minutes over the last four games. You know that, you know, Clay and Steph both have those lingering injuries. Draymond is got some battle scars, to say the least. Andre, you know, even Kevin's got to be feeling it here, and Kevin's, you know, the easy money sniper. Like, they're putting in heavy minutes, and say what you will about the Rockets, but like Austin Rivers was pretty damn good tonight, and he gave them 27 minutes off the bench. Like James Harden and Chris Paul are going to have to carry the load. Don't get me wrong. And both of them came up limping at one point, I believe in the fourth quarter. But 45 and 43, they're kind of used to that by now. 45 minutes for Eric Gordon, who was also fantastic in this game. I'm interested to see how fatigue plays a role in game four here, because the Warriors have every reason to have some sluggish legs, much like Steph Curry when he went up for the dunk.
Yeah, well, there's a reason why I think Steve Kerr decided not to have practice on Sunday. It was an interesting concept because before game three, Steve and Draymond and Clay, I was asking about the whole idea that, you know, what's been the transition phase of going from regular season to postseason minutes, knowing that, that's always going to be a thing, but like in the regular season was super conservative, and then all of a sudden you have this heavy workload. And they're saying the fact that they made all these deposits and pockets of rest throughout the season, it accumulated. But I feel like this is going to evaporate pretty quickly.
Right.
And
they're going on a wicked spending spree right now.
Yeah, and Steve was kind of a little, and I think it's partly just how the question was asked, but like he was asked about the bench, and he was a little dismissive about it. But the reality is they got to get at least one bench player that can give them 20 minutes.
Just one guy. Yeah. Can they find one dude?
And if Kevon Looney doesn't get in foul trouble, yeah. But I feel like you have to find someone. I think the ideal is you have someone who can at least give you 20 minutes, and then you have another guy who can give you maybe 10. Mm-hmm. And then the other ones, yeah, single digits here or there, you're just buying time. But outside of Looney, I can't really think of anyone. I mean, Livingston will give him enough not to screw anything up, but he's not equipped to play a lot of minutes where he's at in his career. So this is really going to come down to your guy, Dieter, Kevon.
Yeah, and I as I kind of mentioned before, I don't necessarily like that position. I think that the Rockets have figured it out. Took them long enough, but I think that they figured it out. Now, he did knock down a nice jumper today, which is always a bonus, but I think the onus is on Livingston. I think that the onus needs to be on Alphonso McKinney. And that's a dangerous territory to be playing with, because you don't really want to ask Livingston for anything more than he's ever given you. And you don't want to really trust McKinney for long stretches of time, because he's prone to get wild out there. And so, but this is where this team is at. Now, you know, you take care of business early in the first quarter and you force the Rockets to have to accumulate points in bunches. Maybe that changes things and the rotations are there. One suggestion, other than the Quinn Cook one, which is, can Quinn Cook give you 3 minutes of just possessing the basketball so you don't turn it over and you're not taking terrible shots at the end of the shot clock at the beginning of the second quarter? I think that's a viable thought. Other one, maybe you split up Draymond and Steph for the first time in a while. I understood why the Warriors did that a couple of weeks ago, maybe even a month or so ago. Maybe it's time to split that up and put Draymond back in with that start of the second unit group, because he can possess the ball, and they're going to be double-teaming Durant, which means that you get those four-on-three opportunities. I think that we're going to see some fairly serious rotation changes going into game four, because certainly what they did in game three did not work, and they were lucky to get to overtime and have a chance to win it.
Well, yeah, it didn't work on both ends. And, I mean, I get the predicament Steve is in, but it's figuring out the details. Like, you look at the second quarter, he has a staggered unit that wets the bed, but he has to give some rest for these guys. But at the same time, it's all about finding the right combination of how you stagger your all-stars. Who can you get from your bench without screwing anything up? Like, I understand maybe giving Quinn Cook some time offensively, but to what extent will that cost them defensively?
Well, I mean, it can't hurt as much as Jonas Jerebko, who's just getting run at every time.
Right. For sure. The other thing is, I'm wondering, hey, well, maybe Jordan Bell could have used some minutes instead of Jerebko.
Absolutely.
But he's been kind of up and down and unprepared. So I don't know.
Jordan Bell might not be with this team.
The problem is this bench is just awful. So it's like you're choosing all these less than ideal options.
It's like the buffet in the writer's room after the game. It's like, we have a nice spread for a sandwich, but no bread and no meat.
Any Jacob Evans chance while we're at it?
No, man. They brought around Damian Lee and Marcus Derrickson, for reasons I can't fully explain because they are not on the active roster, but they're nice guys, so I guess it's nice to have them around. They might regret not having Damian Lee on the active roster. I understand the difficulty because you would have had to make a very tough decision on cutting somebody, but if Quinn Cook's not going to get minutes in game four, then you messed up straight up. If you watch the game three tape and you can't think to yourself, maybe we should put Quinn Cook out there knowing that he's probably going to give up as much as he gets, which is the definition of treading water, right? Just holding place. That's all you're asking for. They're not even treading. That's all they need to do with those beginning of the second quarter minutes. Just tread water. They're just taking it in. They're just sucking down water left and right. It's the Titanic out there. It almost sunk the game. If you look at that and you still say, "Now we can't go with Quinn Cook," then you messed up by not having Damian Lee on the active roster and not cutting Quinn Cook. Maybe it would have made Kevin sad, but then you made a mistake. I think that they should play him. I think that he could be positive because certainly you got nowhere to go but up with this. I like Jonas. He's a nice guy. You can't play him again. You can't play him again outside of like a one or two stretch possession, kind of those, you know, Jordan Bell minutes. Like, here, have 5 seconds. You know, we need you to get a rebound or something, or we need you to knock down a three-pointer on a weird, you know, we're going to drop this play and we need the spacing. Like, if Jordan Bell isn't getting minutes now, we've had three games here where Jordan Bell has not gotten minutes. Maybe game four is the one that changes everything. I'm doubtful. I think that they'll play Kevin at center before they do that.
Yeah, I mean, the way I see it, like, he may as well just start his free agency negotiations right now with other teams.
Yeah. I don't think the Warriors would file any tampering complaints. I also don't know how many calls he'd get back. It will be interesting to see because I think you look at the beginning of the fourth quarter when Kevin was doing all that, and they put McKinney out there. And maybe McKinney's the guy. I mean, maybe this is – you just have to roll the dice with him because sometimes he is absolutely fantastic and he's a spark plug and everything goes. And he knocks down one three-pointer and it's manna from heaven. Tonight, I thought he was fine and he airballed 2 threes. So really, some positivity to be gleaned there, though there's probably a point of diminishing returns with him, all things considered. This is a tough series. I mean, this is a weird spot for the Warriors to be in. They look vulnerable in a game. But certainly they lost. They've looked vulnerable all series. They've never looked like the extreme dominant team. They look like they're winning on the margins. And Kevin is playing out of his mind. Draymond is playing out of his mind. Andre Iguodala went 3 for 4 from beyond the arc today. I mean, he's playing out of his mind. If they could get one more person, just one, doesn't matter if it's Clay or Steph. Obviously, those two probably should. But it doesn't matter if it's Looney or McKinney or Livingston, just anybody. You get one extra player to turn in a performance that's normal for them, up to their own standards. The series is already over. And instead, they're going into a game four tired, frustrated. I think frustration is a fair term to use with this team. They're going to be optimistic because they've been through the wars. This is certainly not a stressful situation for them, but they know, damn it, this might actually be a thing now, and we really missed a great opportunity tonight where we would have stole one. They could have stole one tonight. They played like crap, and they had a chance to win because of Kevin. It's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to game four. Can't get here soon enough, though I know for the Warriors it can't get here late enough. What's the big thing you're looking for in game four? Quick preview here. What's the one thing?
Looking for Steph. I mean, here's the thing. We're talking about all these unknowns with the bench and all that. Steph is more of a definitive person. Can he make the shots you're supposed to make? If he made 3 more shots tonight, you know, say one of them from 3, the other 2 layups, he would have won the game.
Right.
That's, I think, more likely to happen than finding the right bench combinations, because you're just – Steve's a MacGyver at this point. He's looking at a pencil, you know, a paper clip, and a rock, and he's asked to be making some kind of weapon out of it.
Make a 3-and-D wing out of this. That's pretty perfect. And Lord knows Steve has been known to be creative with his rotations in the playoffs. I remember some Anderson Varejao game 7 minutes. Big thing I'm looking for is Klay Thompson outplaying Eric Gordon for the first time in a minute. Last two games, Eric Gordon has been better than Klay Thompson out there offensively. And Klay looks like he's forcing up some stuff. Obviously, a lot of this has to do with Steph. But when you're getting traps on both Steph and Kevin, that opens up an opportunity for somebody. And yes, Draymond is being left wide open. I get that. You get Andre being left wide open. I get that. But one or two extra passes, you know, if you play the beautiful game the way that the Warriors can, especially with the Rockets making adjustments, I thought, tonight to take away the basket a couple of times, that should leave Klay Thompson wide open for some threes. And I'm interested to see if he can knock him down. He was 2 for 6 tonight, which isn't bad, but it's not good. And I don't know what his numbers are in this series, but we know when Klay gets going, it's very hard to stop him. And I would make it almost a point of emphasis early in game 4. Let's get Klay going. Yes, Steph wants to get going. You got to keep giving the ball to KD. You want to play, you know, the right way. But Andre's not going to give you 3 or 4 from beyond the arc again. His three-pointer's been great, don't get me wrong, but that ain't happening again. Draymond Green was resplendent tonight on offense. 19 points. They snuck up on you, too. 19 points for Draymond. He had a triple-double in this game, 11 rebounds, 10 assists. He's just been absolutely fantastic. You can't count on that every night. You can count on it on the defensive end. You cannot count on that kind of offensive production, even with him running that 4-on-3 so often. I've said this a couple of times at certain points in the season. If you don't know whether to get Kevin going or get Steph going, get Klay going. He's the bridge. He's the one who can kind of connect those two players. That would be my point. Let's get Klay going early on in game 4, because the Rockets don't have an answer for that. I like Eric Gordon. He's a really good player. But Klay can get nuclear in a way that no other player, other than perhaps his teammate, Stephen Curry, can. He can blow a game wide open on his own. There's just a different energy to a Klay run than almost anybody else other than Steph. And it will take some of the load off of Steph, too, because the last thing you need is Stephen Curry pressing. He'll hijack a game pressing. We've seen it time and time again. We've also seen him, of course, take over games in a positive light. Listen, I'm looking for a good Klay performance. You're looking for a good Steph performance. I think that we can all agree that the best performance you can do between now and game 4 is to pick up a subscription to the East Bay Times or the San Jose Mercury News. And the best way to do that, without a doubt, is the Klay deal, which is 11 cents a day for 11 months. That's a value you're just not going to beat. I mean, you can add it up. What can you get for 11 cents? That's tiddlywinks. I can find that in this couch that we're sitting on right now. I guarantee it. The Klay deal, 11 cents a day for the next 11 months. And of course, you can subscribe to the Warriors HQ podcast. You can do that on all the major podcast platforms. What you should do before all of that, though, is you should follow Mark Medina on Twitter. I don't know why you're not, but if you haven't gotten to that point, now's your time. Mark Medina is the voice of reason in this age of madness, and you can get him at MarkG_Medina. It's MarkG_Medina, and you can find me on Twitter, where I'm forced to be a bit pithier, at D. Kurtenbach. That's D-K-U-R-T-E-N-B-A-C-H. The Warriors do not have any practice by the time you listen to this on Sunday. We will have a bit of a media availability with Steve Kerr around 11:30 Houston time. So probably by the time you're listening to this, we'll have already talked to Steve again. I wonder what will have changed in the 12 hours since we last spoke. And then game 4 Monday night, Houston, Texas. Travis Scott will be here, I'm sure. And we'll be here. We'll break it all down for you after that one. Appreciate you guys listening. Appreciate the feedback. We will talk after Monday's game 4. Should be fun.